So the 16th chapter deals with the two kinds of people, which are the majority in the world, the divine called the Sura and the undivine called the Asura. The divine and the undivine. The divine are the people who are supremely good, who have all the good qualities. And the first three chapters of this, the first three verses of this chapter deals with the qualities of the good. Abhaya, Sattva, Samshuddhi, Jnana, Yoga, Vyavasthitihi, Yajnamscha, Dhammascha. So all the good qualities, fearlessness, purity, right thinking, honesty, and all these good qualities were dealt in detail in the first three verses. And in the fourth verse, the teacher very briefly refers to six qualities of the undivine. Dambha, darpa, abhimanascha, so arrogance, pride, ego and all that. So the idea being that it's not that the people who are asuras, even though asuras, we take them to be evil, but in the Hindu philosophy, in the way of thinking, there are no good or evil people. Majority of the people are either good or have the potential to be good. So the asuras are people who are not divine. It does not mean that they have an active evil nature. They are people like us. We know what is right. We know what is good. But we are not able to practice it. So when you don't practice the good qualities, the wrong qualities automatically come. It's not a conscious effort. You don't consciously practice evil. You cannot say, oh, I'll be neither good nor evil. I'll be in between. No, you have to choose. Either I am good, or if I don't do good, then because I have to act. I have to work. So if you do not choose to practice the good qualities, then your actions will be undivine, will be arrogant, will be, selfish, pretentious, all those things. So in the first three verses, we learned about the 26 good qualities. In the fourth, he just very briefly mentioned six of the major qualities. The rest of the chapter, the entire 16th chapter, deals with the people who are not divine, the people who are asuras, because that is what he wants to teach us. The teacher wants us to see what are the characteristics of people who are not divine and see if we have any of those characteristics. If we have, then let us make an effort to remove them. In the fifth verse, which Pankaj did last week, it says that those who practice the good qualities automatically get freedom, get liberated, not only from the sorrows of the world, but also from the bondages. They can evolve higher, they can become more evolved, they can go beyond birth and death. But those who practice these negative qualities, like anger, greed, jealousy and all, they get more and more caught in their selfishness, in their hatred, in their problems. And so the undivine leads to bondage. Devi Sampad Vimokshaya Nibandhya Yasuri Mata. So now the rest of the chapter, Sri Krishna is going into detail analyzing, just as when you have a body in medical school, you dissect each part. You dissect the arm, the chest, the abdomen, and you look at the details of each organ, and you go the muscles and the nerves and the ligaments and the tendons. So similarly, he's dissecting the personality of a person who is not divine, so that we may see what are the characteristics and we may apply that. So let us read the verse. Verse number 6. Dvabhuta sargo lokesmin daiva asura eva cha devo vistarash proktaha दैवो विस्तरशः प्रोक्तः आसुरं पार्थ मे शृणु सो सर्गौ सर्ग इज क्रिएशन सो इन दिस क्रिएशन द्वौ भूत देर आर टू काइंड्स ऑफ बीइंग्स लोके अस्मिन् इन दिस वर्ल्ड लोक इज दिस वर्ल्ड अस्मिन् इन दिस वर्ल्ड दैट हैज बीन क्रिएटेड इट सेज देर आर टू काइंड्स ऑफ बीइंग्स दैव आसुर एव च सो दैव the divine and asura the undivine evacha so these are the two of course we had mentioned before about rakshasas which krishna doesn't go into this chapter rakshasas are those people who are intrinsically evil who are so incorrigibly evil that scriptures are not for them these are people like drug addicts criminals you know really incorrigible they have to suffer the consequences of their karma before they can study the scripture so he's not talking about those so daiva asura evacha he says daivo vistara shah proktah so vistara in detail in the first three verses I have already spoke or about the daiva has been spoken here he's using the passive tense that we have already spoken about the divine people Asuram partha meshrunu. O Arjuna partha, listen to me about the asura meshrunu. Please listen. He does not say hear, but say listen, because there is a difference between hearing and listening. Hearing is something, you know, you just hear. Like, say you hear the news. They don't say listen to the news. You hear the news. Okay, TV is coming, radio. But listen is when you listen and pay attention. When you listen to a discourse or when you listen to, in your school or college, when you're listening to the professor, they don't say hear the professor. They say listen because what the teacher is telling is something that we need to absorb. We need to understand. Not put in one ear and out the other ear, but let it stay within. So that's why he says, Oh Arjuna, please listen to me. Because what I'm about to say is very important. And actually the next verse, especially the seventh verse, I think is one of the most important verses. So we'll spend a lot of time talking about this. But let us briefly go into the sixth verse. So they said bad is absence of good. It is not a positive existence of bad, except for the rakshasas. But the majority of people are not positively bad. It is because they choose not to pick up the good path, they know the scriptures, they have heard from the teachers, they have been taught from childhood, they know the Ten Commandments, they know all the values on the Bhagavad Gita. But when they do not choose to practice, then that is called evil, that is called bad. Because in Hinduism, there is no such thing as God and devil. Even though in Christianity, even in Islam, they talk about there is a power called God and power called devil. But since we believe that the Brahman, the Atman, the consciousness is all pervading, it's omniscient, omnipotent everywhere. So how can there be a power called devil? Because the way some of the scriptures portray that there is a power called God and then there is a power called devil who is equally powerful. So the God is trying to take us towards good and devil is trying to take us towards evil. So that means that there is a power which is as powerful as God, which can take us towards the wrong. And then if that is the so, then who created the devil? They say, well, God created everything. Then why did he create this devil? And if the devil is that powerful, then God is not omnipotent. He's not that powerful because he cannot eliminate this devil. And he's not omniscient. And he's not omnipresent. So that's why we do not say that there is anything called devil. What we say is absence of God leads to devilish qualities. See, that one has to be very clear. That when the God is not in my life, then automatically I develop the qualities which are ascribed to the devil, which are ascribed to the wrong thinking, the wrong behavior, the wrong actions. So that is very important to understand, that intrinsically people are not intrinsically evil. Because all of us have this Atman, the consciousness, Lord is presence within us. It is because we close our eyes to the Lord and we turn our attention, our body, mind and intellect is turned out into the world of objects, emotions and thoughts, trying to acquire, possess. And so our eyes are turned away, even though God is within us, we don't pay attention to Him. We don't think about Him or her or it, this consciousness. Because of our vasanas, our selfish tendencies, we are all the time looking for happiness in the world and acquiring, possessing, cheating, hurting others. And so in the process, I forget God within me. And so when you pray or when you meditate or when you serve the world as a manifestation of the Lord, slowly your selfish vasanas get reduced and slowly the divinity shines forth. And so the question is, if the difference between a Mahatma and a criminal is their vasanas. To the extent their vasanas are negative, selfish, to that extent he is evil. As he reduces his vasanas, that's why in a Mahatma, when you're dealing with a saint or a wise person, you find they have minimum desires. You know, they live in the bare minimum. They don't have any possessions. Their whole goal is to serve the world, because they are so much in touch with the Lord within that they are divine. That is why when you sit in the presence of these Swamijis and Mahatmas, you feel that you are in the presence of God Himself. But in you and me, because we have still a lot of desires, a lot of vasanas, so we don't express the divinity as much as they do. So that is what they say, that God and devil are not two independent entities, are not two independent powers. So like we have talked even last week, it is like light and darkness. Like darkness does not have a positive existence. You don't say there is a lot of darkness in this room. Suppose all the lights are turned off. If darkness was a positive entity, then you could take a bucket and throw buckets of darkness outside and soon the room would be light. You can't do that because darkness does not have its own existence. Darkness is just the absence of light. The moment you put a little candle, all the darkness disappears because darkness has no independent existence. So similarly, evil does not have an independent existence. It is only absence of good. Talking about light and darkness reminds me of a little story. There were this man and woman who worked in the office and they both wanted to leave early. And they said, you know, we need to leave early today. So how do we fool the boss? So the girl climbs up and hangs herself from the ceiling. So the boss says, what are you doing? She was wearing yellow. What are you doing? She says, I'm a light. So boss says, come down. He says, you know what? You have been working too hard. You know, that's why you have so much stress, you know. So just take a half a day off. Go home early today. You know, I know you're under a lot of stress. So she leaves. So the man closes his books and walking out. So boss says, where are you going? He says, how can I work in darkness? He said, he left too. So light and darkness are just two relative situations. When there is no light, there is darkness. And what is the difference between the suras and the asuras? So Swami Chinmayananda in his commentary says it very beautifully, that the people who are divine can appreciate good things, can appreciate subtle qualities, like their mind is much more subtle, it's much more pure, it's much more divine. While an asuric person, his mind is more gross, it is more materialistic, it is more involved in the world. There's a beautiful piece of classical music playing, you know, very, you know, beautiful Indian classical or Western class. Now, at least for a person like me, I say, okay, it's good music. Well, I cannot appreciate the subtleties of what raga it is playing and how does, you know, the instrumentalist is going up and down and how he's changing the ragas and how he's changing the tune. And I cannot, you know. So a person like me say, okay, it's good music. But a true lover of music says, aha, you know, this is Bhairavi Raga, or in the case of Western music, this is the kind of rhythm or the note. Or so just as a musician can appreciate music, or a poet, the poetry, somebody is composing beautiful ghazals or beautiful poetry and all, a person will say, it's okay, it's a good song. But a person who truly understands poetry can appreciate, no. Look at the depth of the expression of the poet. Or an artist, painting, a beautiful painting, a true artist can appreciate the amount of labor has gone into it and how the artist has gone and created the three-dimensional effects and all. So just as a musician can appreciate music, an artist can appreciate art, a poet can appreciate poet, but a person who does not have that talent, does not have the subtlety of the mind. So similarly, these Asuric people, their mind is very gross. They are so involved in material things, just khao piyo maja karo, just enjoy life. What is to worry about, the present or the future? Just think about. And so they do not have time. You tell them, sit down and, let us sit and listen to the Upanishads. They say, who has time? I don't even understand it. I don't have time. I'm too busy working. You say, sit down and, listen to some good, nah, they don't have time. Come and sit in the temple. Come and sit in some lecture. Swamiji is here. That's why when Swamiji is here, we're lucky we find 30 or 40 people. But if you have a film concert, film star performing like Shah Rukh Khan, there'll be 5,000 people and you won't even be able to buy tickets, or Madonna or somebody like that. I mean, people will spend thousands of dollars and don't even think twice, and they will want front row tickets. But if you have a Vedantic scholar, you're lucky if you find 30 or 40 people, because this is not everybody's cup of tea. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about priorities later on. So not everybody thinks in that line. So that's why that is the difference between the suras and the asuras. So why do we study this? Because it is to remove the negativities. Because once, most of the time, we are not even aware of our negative qualities. But once we become aware, then at least half the battle is won. Like say you have a black spot on your face and whole day you have been walking around and you didn't even know that. And for hours and hours, and nobody, people are staring at you, but you think, they're admiring my shirt. But nobody has told you that there is a black spot. And then at the end of the day, you happen to go in the mirror and say, oh gosh, I have had this black spot all day. Now, do you at this moment call your spouse and say, honey, do you think I should remove this black spot on my face? Or do you call your children and say, look, no, you instantly wipe it off. But in spirituality, we say that, I have these negativities, but I don't want to do it right now. Maybe after retirement. After I get older or after some time, now this is my time to enjoy. Or suppose you open your closet and you find a cockroach dead. Now that it might have been dead for 6 months, but it's behind and you happen. You don't call your family and say, let us see whether this cockroach, should it be removed or should it not be removed? The poor fellow has, no, you don't. You pick up the paper and you instantly throw it. So the idea is that once you discover a negative quality, you instantly make an effort to remove it. You don't think about it. You don't discuss. You don't say, I need to talk to Swamiji, or I need to talk to my wife or my husband or my neighbor, or I need to think about it. Let me think. Maybe, it's okay. Everybody has some negative qualities. What's wrong with that? And I have some negative. Everybody has. So as long as you were not aware, yes, it's understandable. Ignorance, they say, even though in the law, ignorance is not allowed. Say you're ignorant, and you didn't know the law, you may sometimes get away. But in spirituality, if you have ignorance, then you are forgiven. In the law, they may say, oh, like you say, officer, I didn't know the speed limit was 55. And I was driving 70. He says, whether you knew or not, the limit is 55, so you will get a ticket. So ignorance is not forgiven in the law. But in spirituality, if you are truly ignorant about certain things, you never knew about it, then you may be forgiven, but once you become aware, then you have no excuse. It's like you go to the doctor, you haven't been feeling good, and you know the doctor examines you and he checks you, and then he gets a scan and blood work, and he finds there's a tumor that was growing. Now the tumor had been growing for 6 months or a year, and you didn't know about it. So, you know, you don't do anything. You just keep on saying, I don't feel good. But once you have been told that there is a tumor, then obviously the next thing is, okay, then you go to a surgeon and say how best it can be taken out, you know, whether if it's cancer or not, you want the diagnosis, you want it taken out as fast as possible, you want radiation, chemotherapy. So similarly, once I have discovered my negative qualities, then you start the process. Like you're removing the tumor, you go to a surgeon, a cancer specialist, and so on, radiation and all. So similarly, once you have discovered your negative qualities, which in the next 15, 16 verses, Krishna will be going into more detail. So verses in the Bhagavad Gita, all the 700 verses are not to look at my neighbor. I have told that before. It's not my neighbor and needs to read Bhagavad Gita, or my spouse, my husband, and I should bring him to these classes. No, it's not for that. Each of these verses are for me, that how can I improve my life? And once I improve my life, then automatically it will have an impact on my spouse, my neighbor, my friends. So the idea of the Bhagavad Gita is apply this knowledge to yourself, remove your negativities, develop the positive qualities, and then you will become a source of inspiration to others, a source of guidance to others. If you yourself have a bunch of negativities, then it is very hard for you to help anybody else. So they say, first purify your own mind, purify your actions, become a divine individual, and then you can advise the world. Then the world will follow, because the people, you may say something, but if your actions do not correspond to what you're saying, then obviously your actions will have no effect. Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda says in one place, he says, your words will have no effect unless you are yourself following them. So apply this knowledge in your own life, and then you can help others. So that is the essence of the sixth verse. Any comments? Any discussion? Yes.
Negative qualities, it's easy to say, like to remove something physical, like a spot or a cockroach, but
right.
Negative are so innate.
Right.
That it's, you can work on it,
mm-hmm.
but it might just, like greed, jealousy, anger, they might just keep coming back, and it's not as easy.
Yes. No, actually, that's a very good point. Yeah, it's not that easy like removing a spot or a cockroach. But the point is that how did they develop over years? You know, how did I develop this from childhood? And we say these vasanas are not only from childhood, but are from multiple lifetimes. So the idea is not to get discouraged and say, oh, so many lifetimes. But at least now I have the knowledge. Like Gurudev Swami Chinmayananda, when somebody asked, no, Swami Tejomayananda, somebody asked him, Guruji, he says, you know, this process is so difficult. He says, think about it. You have already sat in the plane. Sooner or later you will reach. You want to reach India. You say, oh, it's 22 hours of flying time. And there is a 6 hour stopover. It's so long. When will I reach India? But at least you got into the, you know, aircraft. So sooner or later, in 6 hours, 22 hours, whatever time, you will reach. So do not get discouraged. You know, people say, oh, I can't go to India. It's too long a journey. But so similarly, once having picked up the Bhagavad Gita, having started listening to this knowledge, you are already on the plane. You're already on the path to spirituality. You're already on the going that way. So do not get discouraged. You say that the fact, see, a lot of people don't even know what is written in the Bhagavad Gita. At least we have the good fortune of having Swami Chinmayananda as our guru, who gave us this knowledge. So now that we have this knowledge and we have started on this path, what will happen is slowly it will be removed. It's like the wall that has a lot of dirt on it, a lot of paint, and you know, for years it has been neglected. Now you can't just spray water and take it off. Another wall just has a little, you know, dust. You can spray water. This one you have to brush, you have to get some turpentine, you have to, it'll take you a lot of effort. So similarly, depending on the extent of my vasanas, depending on how pure or impure my mind is, it will take time. But what will happen is, as you start on the path, you will find that there will be a great joy that will be arising within you, because you will be making a conscious effort to be a better individual, a more sharing, a more loving, a more calming, a more sweeter person. So automatically your life will become better and your surroundings will become better. So as you progress, and it doesn't, you don't have to wait till the end, till I become a saint, till I become like Jesus or Shankaracharya or Buddha. No, as I am progressing, it will slowly, slowly make your life better. So the fact that you are already aware of this and started practicing itself, that means you are on the plane, and the journey is not too far. And the journey is not far. It is not anywhere to reach. The God is already with me. All I have to do is recognize him. People think, you know, spirituality is a journey that I have to go somewhere in the future, in some, you know, maybe when I go to this place, or when I go to Kailash, or when I go to Bethlehem or Mecca, and maybe in this birth or next birth. It doesn't. It can happen in an instant. Because all you have to recognize that I am that divinity. And as you practice, slowly, slowly your vasanas will get less, your mind will become purer. And so the process itself is enjoyable. The journey itself is fun. You don't have to wait for the goal. A lot of times, say I want to reach somewhere. Say I want to reach Alaska. You know, so I have to go through the flight and go through the journey is not as fun, it's boring. But when I reach Alaska, oh, that is nice. When I get in the ship, in the cruise ship. But here, even the journey is enjoyable. Even the journey is fun. It's you don't have to wait till the end to reach. It's like in a mountain. When you're climbing a mountain, you know, the peak, of course, is the goal. But as you climb, you will find that the view gets more beautiful, and the trees get, you know, prettier, and it gets, you see the valleys. So the climb up the mountain is joyful. And of course, when you reach the peak, it is even better. So similarly, spirituality is a journey where as you progress, your life gets better and it's more fun. But thank you. That's a good point. Yeah. Yes. Yes, yes. Like Rabindranath Tagore, he was an example of he won the Nobel Prize. He was not only a very evolved poet, but a very spiritual person. Even Shakespeare, if you look at his writings, there's a lot of subtlety and a lot of good messages and good ideas. Most of these poets, their poetry is full not only of appreciation of nature, but a very divine. A lot of them have good messages. Like Mirabai, you know, her, or all the great saints, you find there, she composed a lot of songs, or Tukaram and all. So all their songs were not only full of love for God, but had a great message. Yeah, so these poets and musicians and artists, they say are closer to the truth because they're dealing in more subtle aspects of the personality. I think that's, again, it depends on the motive. You know, some poet may be composing poetry just to become famous and make a lot of money. But those are the few. The majority of them are actually poor, and they're artists, you know, they don't make much money. Musicians, they are all the time, you know, starving. But they do it because of the love of music or the love of art. Yeah.
And even some of the rock musicians, when you really listen to the lyrics,
right, to create something new, you have to be close to your creative nature. To create something new is not easy. And you have to be in touch with the subtle aspects of your personality. Creation, coming out with new ideas is very difficult. A new poetry or a new music or a new tune or a new story. So yes, I think creativity can only come when your mind is still. If your mind is very agitated, disturbed, angry, you know, fighting and unhappy, then creativity doesn't come. So when their mind is still, then only, then they are closer to the truth, then creativity comes. So that's, I think that's a good point. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhavet. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Hari Om. This verse, I think, will need more time. So let us discuss. This is a very, very beautiful verse. And actually, it has so many interpretations. I was reading different commentaries of Swami Chinmayananda and Ishwarananda and all. It's interesting how many interpretations come out of this pravritti and nivritti. It was mind-boggling to me. And I tried to cover all that. That's why I have two pages of ideas. So hopefully we can cover them today. Pravrittim cha nivrittim cha. Janana vidura suraha.
Janana vidura suraha.
Na shaucham na pichacharaha.
Na shaucham na pichacharaha.
Na satyam teshu vidyate.
Na satyam teshu vidyate.
So now he is analyzing, dissecting the people who are asuri, who are not divine. So he says, pravrittim cha nivrittim cha. Pravritti is what to do and nivritti is not to do. Vritti means thought. So pravritti is prakarshena vritti. So what is good, and nivritti is to withdraw. So pravritti is what to do and what not to do. But there are many other meanings, but the simplest meaning is what I should do, what I should not do, like the do's and don'ts. Like we tell our child, you know, you should tell the truth, do not tell lies, you should not steal, you should. So that is the grossest level of pravritti and nivritti. So pravritti cha, nivritti cha, pravritti and nivritti, jana, these people, na vidu, jana, asura jana. Asura, so the people who are asuri, who are undivine, na viduhu, they do not know. They do not know what I should do, what I should not do. And then what else? Na shaucham. Shaucham means purity. So they do not have purity. They do not have cleanliness. Na api cha charaha. So cha is separate. Cha acharaha. So achara is not the achar that we eat, but acharaha is the conduct. So na acharaha. So they do not have purity. They do not have the right conduct. Na satyam and nor truthfulness teshu in these beings vidyate is not seen. So these people have neither purity nor right conduct nor truthfulness. Why? Because they do not know what I should do or what I should not do. And then pravritti and nivritti in Sanskrit can be interpreted in many ways, and we'll go into the details of that in the other slide. First is what I should do, what I should not do. Second is to work or to withdraw. That means sannyasa. And then pravritti also means creation and dissolution. So the simplest is what I should do, what I should not do. And we all know that. You know, that if you do the right things, then you will become a good person. People will like you if you are the honest and if you are truthful and if you are just. And then everybody will appreciate you, you know. But if you do things that are wrong, even though temporarily you may become successful by cheating or hurting others, but in the long run, you will end up in trouble with the law, or you will end up in some problem, or you will end up with criticism, or people will sooner or later find out. And it depends on the society, not only in an individual, like in an individual also, we may have good and bad qualities. So which quality predominates in you? Are you predominantly a good person or are you predominantly a bad person? Are you bad again means you do you practice the good values or you don't practice? So depending on what is, because we are a mixture. See, we all of us are a mixture of good and bad. If you were totally perfect, 100%, and you had no impurities, then you couldn't survive in this body. Then you would become God. You would become, because complete goodness is absolute. And such a person is the fact that we are functioning in this body and we have this body, mind, and intellect. We have still the mixture of good and bad, except for a few realized masters or souls who have reached the highest and they are just living the rest of their life, their prarabdha in this body to fulfill it. But most of us are a mixture of good and bad. And so depending on what percentage of my thoughts are good or bad will determine whether I'm a good or a bad individual. And similarly, in society also, we find that depending on what the majority of the people are in that particular society, whether the majority of the people are good or the majority of the people are not good, that determines the nature of that particular society, that particular community, that particular country, even the yuga. That's why they say now we are in Kali Yuga. What is the meaning of Kali Yuga? Where the majority of the people are materialistic, the majority of the people are just looking for me and my, you know, I and myself, not thinking about others, not worried about. There may be a few, you know, who are social workers, you know, people like Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King and Nelson Mandela. So there are people like that who are the guiding lights, but the majority of the people, they don't care. I mean, they may celebrate Gandhi Jayanti, okay, on October 2nd, but the other 364 days, are you practicing Gandhian principles? Are you practicing those values? That's why we have these four yugas, you know, Sat Yuga, Dwapar, Treta, and then Kali Yuga. So the thing was in Sat Yuga, where, you know, the majority of the people are very divine. And even in those days, there were people, of course, there were people who were criminals. Even in Krishna's time, there were, you know, criminals. Even in Ram's time, Ramchandraji's time, there were criminals. Even when Jesus was on the earth, there were criminals. But the point is that are the majority of the people good or bad? Is bad become the norm? And what we find today, it's okay. The bad has become, it's okay. You know, everybody is corrupt. So what if I also cheat? You know, especially if you find in India and all, corruption is so endemic that it has become the norm. People don't even think twice about, you know, doing the wrong thing. And even here we find that it is okay as long as you can get away with it, you don't get caught, it's okay to do the wrong thing. So that is what one has to see, that is the majority in the society good or bad? And then I have to not blindly follow. See, a wise person will know what to do or what not to do. Even if the majority are cheating or dishonest or wrong, I don't have to follow it. I can follow my own principles. And that's what they say, the wise person is the one who can walk against the stream, you know, against the stream of the river. My mother used to say that when the river is flowing, everybody is flowing. You also get in a log of wood and flow with the river. That doesn't need any energy. But if you can fight yourself against the river, everybody else is going this way, but no, I don't want to because that's not the right thing. If you are able to do that, then only shows the mark of strength of a wise person or a good person. Talking about following everybody, this woman calls her husband. She says, are you on 405? He says, yeah. She says, yeah, be very careful. He said, why? He says, I just saw on TV that everybody is going, you know, south on 405 south, but there is one fool who is going north. So be very careful. Make sure you don't hit him. He said, what do you mean, one fool? He said, I'm the only one who is going right on 405. Everybody else is going wrong. So he was not blindly following. He was following his own, and sooner or later he got into trouble. But the point is that in the world, people will follow, you know, and sometimes, you know, especially sometimes some people are, you know, preaching wrong things And a lot of times people don't think, and they become followers of some wrong teachings, and then they become fanatical. Without thinking, they sacrifice their life and do wrong things. Why? Because they have not used the intellect that God has given them. But some mullah or some, not to pick on a particular religion, but some religious head somewhere says something, or like people who, with just Jones, you know, who, I don't know how many hundred people committed suicide. They followed him to Jamaica or somewhere and they all committed suicide. So the point is that a wise person uses his intellect and does not blindly follow the wrong. So he knows what I should do, what I should not do. The second meaning of pravritti is to withdraw. So people should know when to work and when to not work, when to withdraw from work, what we call as sannyas. Like now, all of you are you working or you are not working? Are you engaging or you are not engaging? You'll say, well, I'm not doing anything. Yeah, physically you may not be doing anything sitting, but mentally you are very active, you know, or unless one or two of you might be asleep, but those of you who are awake are mentally active. You are listening. Okay, whatever is being said, let me see if it is useful or not. So physically you may be not working, not doing anything, but mentally you are very active. Why? Because you find that this knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, which was given by Bhagavan Sri Krishna himself, is very beneficial to me, will help me. And then people will ask you, you know, where are you going on Sunday morning? You say, I go to listen to the Gita. What do you do there? Oh, we just sit there and listen. What a waste of time. Let's go and play golf. You know, you spend 4 hours on the golf course, it's much more productive. You know, you can be hitting the ball and you get fresh air. And so it's your question of your priorities. You know, what is your priorities in life? What do you want to do? So physically, you may be not working, but mentally, you are involved. So that is called pravritti and nivritti, where physically I have a nivritti, I am not doing anything, but mentally I am sitting here and listening to the words of the teacher, the words of Bhagavan Sri Krishna and Gurudev. That is what, from whom I have learned, whatever little I know is from Swamiji. So this knowledge that we are all sharing is the knowledge which has come from Bhagavan himself. That's why we see Krishna giving the message. So there, such people know that when should I work and when should I not work. And what we find that in this world nowadays, people do not know that. They do not know when I should work and when should I stop. And we have become all alcoholics, not alcoholics, workaholics, which is the same thing. You know, even when you come home now with the cell phone and the computer and the iPad and iPod and I this and I that, you are not free. Even when people are on vacation, you know, they are sitting on a beach in Hawaii and then they are checking their financial figures and how my company is doing, how much profit it made, how much. In the olden days, at least, you know, once you were gone, you were gone. Okay, I am on vacation. I have no phone or nothing. Nobody can reach me. But now people can reach you instantly. And so we never know how to withdraw from work. And we are working 7 days a week, 365 days, 24 hours a day. Even in the sleep, your mind is active. Why? Because whole day you have been working. So even in your sleep, all you're getting is financial figures, profit and loss, income and expense. So they say that take some time to not do anything. Okay, like I'm on vacation. I'm not going to do anything about business. Weekend, nothing to do with work. Or when I get home, you know, turn off the cell phone, turn off that, and spend time with the children or with the family, or just sit and relax or listen to some good music, listen to some good words. Because you need time to do nothing. Because if you have been doing a lot all day, and then your sleep is disturbed, and then you wake up in the morning and then you start, oh, you know, you try to meditate. You have studied, you know, meditation is very good. But if your mind is all the time stimulated, and then suddenly you say, okay, mind, now shut down and think of nothing, or think of God, or think about silence, you cannot. The mind is doing what it was trained to do. So you having raised the mind all day, and then you say that my mind should now become quiet. That's why people have trouble sleeping. You know, they take all the sleeping pills and all that. Why? Because their mind is overactive. And then when they lie down, even it doesn't have to be work. Even I find some retired people, they're so worried about it. There's so much worry that when they sit down at night, they can't sleep. Why? Because they have raised their mind. So they say, learn to quieten the mind. You know, sit in the evening for a while, just listen to some good music, sit down and read some good books, listen to some good lectures, meditate, or if nothing else, just sit in your backyard and enjoy the scenery. Be one with nature, because nature is the best therapy. She helps to quieten the mind. So just sit and enjoy the trees. It's like you have been going in a train and you're going in the wrong direction. Say you took a wrong train. In New York, I remember the subway, we used to get on the wrong line. And instead of going to Brooklyn, you end up going to Bronx. Or so you've taken a wrong train or a wrong direction. Now that you've suddenly in the middle, you discover, oh, I'm going in the wrong direction. Are you going to jump out of the train? If you do, then that will be, you know, the last. People won't see you anymore. You don't do that. You wait for the next station and then you get down and then you say, okay, now that I have been going in the wrong direction, let me now wait for the other train. And when the other train comes, then you go in the right direction. So similarly, in spirituality, when we have been for so many years or so many lifetimes, like she was saying, have been going in a wrong direction, suddenly you cannot make an about turn and say, from tomorrow I'm going to become a saint like Jesus or Buddha. No. What you have to do is get down, stop at least going in the wrong direction. Just as you have stopped going in the wrong train, you get down in the station and you reevaluate. Okay, you know, I've been going the wrong way, but now let me wait for the right train to come. So take me in the right direction. So similarly, you get down from your thinking and then you slowly make a route about turn, get the right knowledge, get the right train, get the right guru, the right book. So you cannot do it suddenly, but get the right knowledge, get the right guru, and ride that train, ride that knowledge towards your spiritual journey. So that is what they're saying, that it is a gradual process. It is not sudden, it is not dramatic, but once you become aware, like the person came to know he was going in the wrong direction, then he's not going to continue. The next opportunity, he will get down and turn around. So similarly, change your life, turn it around. And what we find is that in life, during the three stages, time, money, and energy are three things that we don't have at the same time. Like in the youth, I have a lot of time and a lot of energy, but no money, right? A young person has no money. Then when he's a householder, oh, he has accumulated money now. He has energy, but he has no time to enjoy the money. Why? He's working. And then in old age, he has a lot of time and a lot of money, but no energy. I can't enjoy my life now. I can't even eat. The food doesn't digest. You know, my arthritis hurts. So they are saying, wherever you are, just enjoy your life. You just make time. You know, don't only just try to develop all three. And so that is what. So when you know what to do and what not to do, then you can slow down, you know, the amount of work. So devote some time. Devote some of your energy to enjoying life. So that is what they're saying. That is pravritti and that is nivritti. Knowing what to do and knowing when to not work. When to not work and to withdraw. So that is called sannyas. That's why these sannyasis, mahatmas, they give up the whole world and they put on orange clothes or they put on a priest's habit. So why? They want to devote their life to spirituality. But you and me, being householders, we cannot give up our family or our that quickly. So while you are in the family, find your balance between the time, money, and energy, and make some time for spirituality. Make some time for Bhagavad Gita. Make some time to listen to Mahatmas. We have so many wonderful teachers who come. And so that is what they say. What is meditation? Meditation is nothing but slowing down. So the mind which has been racing, you know, 100 miles an hour, and we do have classes on Thursday evening where we meditate together, and we also, you know, have orientation. So if you're interested in learning about meditation, that's what we do, how to quieten the mind. So we have a 7-step program from Swami Ishwarananda. So how you relax your body and observe your breath and chant the mantra, and then what do you think of and how do you quieten the mind? We're doing Raman Maharishi's beautiful text on that. So meditation is where the mind becomes still, and ultimately in that silence of the mind, you experience God's presence within. So that is called nivritti, where I slow down my mind and turn it towards God. Because the mind is very, very powerful. It's like a river. Swami Chinmayananda describes mind as a river. And a river has so much power that it can create grooves like the Grand Canyon. Now, they say originally the Colorado River was on the surface, but over billions or millions of years, it has been so much power that it has actually created a huge canyon of several thousand feet, 7,000-8,000 feet depth. Why? Because the constant flow of water has so much power. And not only that, but when this water is dammed and channeled in the right direction, it can create so much energy. You know, the Colorado River creates so much energy to not only for the whole state of Nevada, but even part of California, it gets energy. So the water, which if it is properly channeled and directed, can do a lot of good. So similarly, the thoughts that we have create a groove in our mind. I have constantly been, why are my actions wrong? Because my thinking is wrong. So why are these people undivine? It's not their actions are wrong. It is their thoughts are wrong. They have been thinking in a wrong way for many, many years or many, many lifetimes. So these thoughts have created a groove in my mind, which is so deep. But just as a river can be dammed and channeled and then directed in the right way to create positive electricity, positive benefit for the community, it can, like the we have this canal that comes from the, you know, from the river. The water, instead of going into the ocean, is, you know, directed to the canal which comes south, and so many farmers benefit from that. So similarly, our thoughts can be channeled, can be directed, can be moved in a positive direction. So that's the difference between an asura and a sura. It's the quality of their thoughts. So when the negative thoughts come, they say you be alert. And be, if I get a thought of anger or jealousy or hatred, be very alert and consciously remove that thought. Because thoughts take a while. Like if I tell you, whatever you do now, don't think of camel. Can you say, I'm not thinking of camel? No, you have to. So similarly, thoughts have their own power, but you can influence the thoughts. So change the direction of your thought. And what we find is that whenever there is a good book or a good movie, what is the director or what is the author trying to do? Influence your thoughts. Like you're reading Harry Potter. He wants you to think, you know, that you are with that, you know, in that particular world and in that castle and all these beings are there. Or when you're watching a movie and he's trying to create the atmosphere, there is a fire and there is a war and all that is going on, and you become so engrossed in that movie that you even forget and you think it is real. And people actually start crying, you know, when the heroine is suffering, they start crying. Or when the hero is, you know, beating the villain, or the, and then they become happy. So they get so caught up in the movie. So similarly, what happens is that our thoughts get taken over by the author or by the director of the movie. So similarly, a guru, it's not that he's trying to take over, but he wants to change the direction of your thoughts. That's why they say gu and ru. Gu means darkness. Ru means one who removes. So guru is one who removes darkness, one who removes my ignorance. My life, which I was living in ignorant, the guru, out of his compassion, comes and changes the direction of our thoughts so that I then move in the right direction. That's why Arjuna in the 18th chapter, he says, Nashto moha smritir labdva tvat prasada achyuta sthitosmi gata sandeha karishye vachanam tava. He says, my ignorance has been removed and my doubts are all gone. Now I am, my knowledge is very clear. And through 18 chapters, Krishna, you have taught me. Now karishye vachanam tava. Now I shall do. Why? My moha is gone. My delusion is gone. My smritir labdva. My memory has come back. Because Arjuna in the first chapter was a shattered individual. He didn't know what to do. He didn't know what to think. But by the 18th chapter, he became a very clear, brilliant individual who did the right thing. So that is the idea. And then Krishna says, okay, now that I have taught you, now do as you wish. Yat ichesi tat kuru. Because he knows, Krishna knows that my student has now learnt. Now I don't need to tell him anything. He is now ready to fight his life's battles. So that is the sign of a good guru, that when a student has studied, he says, now you're free to go on your own. Now I don't need to chase after you. So that is the advantage of listening to these Mahatmas, listening to them, that they change. And then they don't try to hold on. The idea of a Mahatma is not that he wants to make a big following of 2,000 or 3,000 people. His idea is, as many people come and learn, then they are free. They can then go and teach others. Or if they choose to practice, it is fine. If they don't choose, he doesn't chase after them. So that is the benefit of studying this knowledge. So that is called pravritti and nivritti. I spent a lot of time because there are different aspects. Also, pravritti and nivritti means creation and dissolution. A person who is ignorant, who is a materialistic, who is a asura, you tell him, why was the world created? He said, shut up. Why do I want to know? Here is a glass of wine. Let's sit down and drink. You say, how is the world sustained? How is the world dissolved? I don't need to know. All I need to know is, do I have food or not? We have food. Let's enjoy that. That is the whole purpose of life. You say, what is the purpose of life? The purpose of life is to eat and drink and be merry. Why you're wasting your time trying to get all this knowledge about sarga and creation and dissolution and all? Forget this. If there is some God, let him worry about his own world. I have to worry about from tomorrow, where am I going to get my bread, my living? And today I'm enjoying my life. We'll see about, if these thoughts after retirement, after 65, then maybe I'll, sit down. And Swamiji, he says, come back when I turn 65, then I will talk to you. So these people do not know even what is the purpose of life. Why was the world created? Why am I here? Who maintains this world? And what is the purpose of my life? Why was this whole... So they have no idea, even though it's written in the scriptures. It is very clearly described in all the scriptures, the Bible, the Bhagavad Gita, the Buddha's teachings and everywhere. But they have no interest. So that is what they say, pravritti or nivritti. So they have no interest in creation or dissolution. They have no interest in knowing anything except what is benefiting me and mine. I and mine, that's about it. And so that is called the pravritti and nivritti. And then Krishna says they do not have purity, acharaha, conduct, and satyam, truthfulness. Purity is not only the physical cleanliness. Physically, they may be clean and well-dressed and wearing a nice suit and have plastic surgery done and driving a nice car and living in a big house. But the thoughts is where the purity is more important. Is their mind full of love? Is their mind full of compassion? Are they sweet, generous, kind individuals? That is what determines your purity and cleanliness, not the how you appear on the outside. So that's why he says they have no purity of thoughts. They have, their thoughts are full of negativity. And their conduct, their acharaha, is also negative. Because obviously when my thoughts are negative, then my conduct will be negative. And what Swamiji, actually Ishwaranandaji, always emphasizes, what are your priorities? What is your priority will determine your conduct. Like after you have finished your morning, bath and all that, then it's a weekend. Now, what do you do with that day? It depends on your priorities. Like somebody, says, this person, I'm very angry with him. I haven't shouted at him. So he has that that priority. So first thing in the morning, he picks up the phone and shouts at that person. Another person says, you know, it's a Sunday morning, I should go to church or temple, I should, you know, listen to some good things or so. And then you go in front of God, or even before you leave your house, you go to your temple or your, you know, in a religious place and home, and you say, oh God, I'm starting my day. Let my actions be pure. May you always be with me. May I be a... So my first action, is it an action of shouting and anger or fighting, or is it an action of love or compassion? So one has to set one's priorities very clearly, because depending on the priorities, I will act. So know what is my priority. I mean, of course, we're not saying that one shouldn't work or earn and all that, but that should not be the only goal or only purpose. Sooner or later, one has to redirect the mind's attention towards the spiritual path. So that will determine the achara, the conduct. And then obviously, a person who has wrong thoughts, wrong conduct, obviously cannot be truthful. Because if I have been doing the wrong things, and I have been, then I want it to be hidden, right? A person is doing the wrong thing, he's not going to do it out in the public if it's something illegal or something immoral. It is always done hidden behind closed doors, done late at night. And then I try to hide my books, and I try to cheat. And I, so all the three things, that's why Krishna has properly given the three, because they're all connected. Depending on the thoughts determines my conduct. That is again determined, dependent on my priorities. And then depending on that, and a person who is honest, who is doing the right thing, he has nothing to hide. He's truthful. So that's why he says these people who are asuric, who are undivine, they do not know what to do or what not to do, when to work and when to withdraw from work. They have no idea about knowing about God or about creation or dissolution. And that's why, because of that, their actions are impure, their conduct is impure, and they're untruthful. So this is this beautiful verse. There is still more I could have spoken, but the time is up. So we do have a few minutes if anybody has any comments or any questions. It's a very nice verse. I really enjoyed, you know, talking about it.
No, I was in a conference this weekend, and there was a guy, his family runs a pharmacy business for over 100 years. He's a fourth generation pharmacist, and he made a really good comment that kind of hit me at home, that at night, in the morning when you go to work, your employees are coming to the business, you tell them you leave your problems outside, don't bring it to workplace. And same token, when you go home and you lock in your door and you leave the work at work, and once you go home, it's just basically you have that separate arrangements and don't take work at home.
Right.
And if you do that, that's how they're successful for 100 years, able to keep that clear boundary of having a different sphere of their life.
Right. Right. That's a good point. Yeah, when to work and when to withdraw.
Yeah.
Yeah, having the right understanding. Yeah. And end with a closing prayer. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah. Hari Om.